Oh man, here we go.
Thing is that this is not the end of the story.
Yeah, I mean, it is the start of something big.
You are listening to Behind the Science, a production of the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. Thanks everybody for joining us. I'm Maura O'Neill, Communications Manager here at the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. I'm lucky to be with Tyler Leeson, who's our Curator of Vertebrate Paleontology, as well as Antoine Bercovici, who is one of our research associates and also paleontologist. And they made a big discovery and, you know, wrote a really important paper. So just wanted to get a sense for how you two came to work together. Can you kind of tell us how you first met, came to know each other?
Yeah, I mean, Antoine and I have quite a long history, that's for sure. We met while we were both in high school. So we met in my hometown. So I grew up in, you know, the middle of nowhere, but right in the middle of fossil country. So, and Antoine grew up in Paris. So he talked about, you know, two very different upbringings, Paris versus Marmarth, North Dakota, a town of about 80 people. And Antoine came to North Dakota to find fossils. You know, just like me, he was interested in fossils. And so he came over to look for fossils as part of a group with another scientist in my hometown that was doing some work there. And so we met then, and we've been, you know, close friends and colleagues really ever since. So we've spent a good chunk of our lives looking at this really the same interval of time up in North Dakota and Montana, the last 1 million years of the age of the dinosaurs and the first 1 million years of the age of the mammals. Yeah. And we've spent most of our time up in that area looking at you know, before the extinction of the dinosaurs.
So Antoine in Paris, yeah, as a high schooler, how did you get involved in that program that brought you to North Dakota?
Well, it was interesting because, I grew up in Paris, but I've always been interested in geology and paleontology, and found it was exciting that paleontology actually crosses many fields. It crosses biology, geology, physics, chemistry. So there's a little bit of everything. I thought, well, there's probably something I would love to do in there. So it was actually just after high school graduation that I decided to test this idea by looking for some field program. And I ended up at age 18 in North Dakota, in Marmarth. And I must say that I've been to the United States before. I've been to New York and San Francisco. And I had no idea what was in between. So just out of 18, I said, well, I'm going to go there. So where do I have to go? So I have to land in Bismarck, which is the capital of North Dakota. So how do you go from Bismarck to Marmarth? So I said, well, I'll look on Google and there is a railroad. Well, I'll just take the train. Well, I mean, this is not quite Europe. So I quit. I learned that pretty quickly. And so I ended up there in North Dakota where I met Tyler, and I just fell in love with the area, not only because, well, there's lots of fossils, but because also there's some wonderful people, and the landscape is absolutely amazing. So we do have fossils in Paris, where I live in Montmartre. There is a butte with a church on top of it. And under the church, there is some famous fossil beds where Cuvier has worked on and found some fossils. The problem is that today there is so much buildings on top of it that there is not much you can see. So you have some of those buttes that
cover
North
outcrop.
Dakota as well, but there is no buildings, no vegetation. So you can basically walk out there and see all the fossils poking out of the rocks, which is pretty magical.
So what was the day like that Tyler contacted you about his find in Colorado Springs? How did that conversation go down?
It was, we're all in touch very often, mm-hmm. but I heard about, the strange mammals, well, the fantastic mammals. So I was like, oh, tell me more about that.
And I guess I was sending you some pictures.
You sent me some pictures, yeah. And actually they didn't look like much, because it's true that the nodules and that they're found are really not spectacular. They really look like rock. And I was like, and a lot of that was not prepped at the time.
Yeah.
So it was really hard to wrap your head about the wonder that you would find in those big, hard pieces of rock.
What do you mean that it wasn't prepped at the time? What did the pictures look like?
So it basically looked like a pebble, like a white pebble. And Tyler was like, oh, look at this. There's like teeth all over the place. And I was like, well, okay. I mean, that sounds great. And of course, when all the volunteers and the preparators are working on those, slowly chipping through the rock and exposing those fantastic skulls, like, you really realize that this is a pretty important discovery. But I was very excited, and I got on board very early. So we went to do field work in the Colorado Spring area, and I did what I do, digging little holes to collect pieces of mud.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, it wasn't like that aha moment, because usually when you think of mammals from this interval of time, and a complete mammal, you're thinking of like a jaw with a few teeth in it, like that's pretty complete. Mm-hmm. So when I was texting people or emailing people, I think that's what most people had in their minds when I was telling them, like, we're finding complete mammals. And it wasn't until we started to get some of them prepared, and that's when I started to send, I waited a little bit for some of the collaborators, and I'd include a picture or two, mm-hmm. these jaw-dropping images of these mammals. If you're in the know of this interval of time, right, you just don't find mammals like that and that complete from this interval of time. And that's, I get a lot of questions, you know, from Antoine and from others, you know, are you sure it's from right after the boundary? Or, you know, are you sure you're in the right interval of time? Is it maybe a couple of million years later?
I was going to ask if you had anybody that was dubious based on your photos, but.
Most people, as they should be, you know, most people.
Those are the scientists here, I guess.
Well, also, I mean, but there is very little field area that hasn't been prospected at all, especially in an area like the Denver Basin. There is major cities all everywhere. So it's very easy to go out there and look at outcrops. And actually, many scientists have been out there in the bluffs.
Yeah.
And no one has found anything. But I guess it required some kind of genius to find those pieces of rock.
And different search image.
Yeah. A totally different search image, definitely. So yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that came as a shock to a lot of the collaborators, and myself included. It's like, yeah, I've been finding all these complete mammals, blah, 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 blah. And they're like, well, where? And like, near Colorado Springs. They're like, what? Where? I mean, that area's been looked at over and over again. Usually you think of these big discoveries happening in like a new area. You know, and this is by no means a new
area.
And
you're tying that to this change in search image? Is that what you kind of credit?
Absolutely.
So can you go into what a search, like, what was the commonly accepted? What is a search image?
Yeah, so all paleontologists have a search image. You know, Antoine's search image looking for pollen is very different than my search image looking for vertebrates, than Ian's search image for looking for plants. It's all, we key on certain rocks, certain color rocks, certain depositional environments. In the vertebrate world, we usually look for bone weathering out of the ground. So you just hike around the bases of the hills and you look for bone coming out of the hill. And I did that for a few days, and I don't think I found a single element. And I started thinking about, well, there's got to be a different way of looking for these fossils. And I started to think about some of my other experiences, particularly in South Africa, where when I first started looking for fossils, I wasn't very successful until I learned from some of their best fossil finders of how to find fossils. And there they looked for a certain type of rock, not for bone, but they searched for concretions, which is just rock that forms around an organic nucleus. And sometimes that organic nucleus can be bone. And so I remember, you know, going out in the field and sort of slowly changing my search image from bone. I mean, I wasn't finding any anyway, to this different type of rock. And that was the real aha moment, you know, where I started to, you know, see the rock, crack open the rock, seeing a complete mammal skull there, you know, smiling back at me, and then looking around and seeing the same type of rock just littering the landscape and being like, oh man, here we go. And sure enough, within a few minutes, then we found a bunch, we found like four or five mammal skulls within a few minutes. And that was one of the most remarkable moments of my life, I think.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen that often. It was, again, just like, you know, you're at the optometrist and they're flipping through, you know, one or two. Like, once you had the right prescription, that right search image, then you could see the fossils everywhere. But if you didn't have it, you were blind to them.
And cracking that open really led you down, I think, coming up on like a 3-year process for cultivating the team, getting this paper put together and submitted to a major scientific publication. Yeah. What was the most anxiety-inducing part of the process both of you, but Tyler can start.
I think for me, it was just like pushing the collaborators and a lot of my friends to almost a breaking point. Because like as Antoine said, a lot of us, we've been working together in similar projects in similar in different areas for a long time. So we become good friends after a while. So several of the co-authors on this paper are friends of mine, including Antoine. And the most stressful part was wanting to get the project done in a certain interval of time. And because of that, having to push my friends so hard, you know, emails and texts and phone calls, you know, in the middle of the night or whatever it would take to push people to get them to get me their part of the data, their piece of the puzzle, so I could then spin it into this amazing story. And so I definitely pushed some friendships to the brink, including Antoine with Ian, with Stephen Chester. There was a lot of angst there.
Antoine, you're still here though. So yeah, and ready for more. What was that experience like for you to work as part of this?
Yeah, it was exciting. As I said, actually for my work, a little bit happens in the field, but a lot happens in the lab and the microscope, just because this is where you count all the fossils and everything. So piecing this data set was very exciting. It was weird also because the Denver Basin is a bit different from what we've been working up north because we have the mountains here. So the story was not as clear cut, and that took us some time to figure out. And what I mean by not clear cut is that we had evidence of what's called reworking. And reworking is when you have older fossils, much older fossils that have been eroded by the elements. And especially here where you have mountain ranges, you have all sorts of rocks that are being exposed to the surface and they are being eroded away. And we had a large amount of reworked material in the pollen record. Mostly we had dinoflagellates, which are seawater algae. So algae coming from the ocean, but they were older than the age of the rock that we have here. They were Campanian, which is the time before the Maastrichtian, the end of the dinosaurs. That was not quite matching, but you also had much older pollen grains from the Permian. So in long before the KT boundary. And this was hard to decipher because we knew that we had this part of pollen and spores that were not Montanerous, and then we had the signal that was Cretaceous and Paleogene, which was the one that we were interested in. So it took quite a while of question and integration to make sure that we had
a lot of me bugging you, Antoine, where's the KT boundary? Where's the KT? And Antoine being, it's not that easy.
So yeah.
You know, because of all the reasons that he just listed, but then I needed his data to you know, which impact where I went and looked for fossils and which impact, you know, had downstream effects. So there was all this back and forth. And
So this was pretty challenging. And one of the other challenges as well is that we have in the Paleocene new taxa that appears, which are called Mummipedes, and they relate to modern walnut, the Juglandaceae family. And those are very important indicators that we have to find. But after an extinction, new stuff that comes are usually not very common. Mm-hmm. So finding those grains have been challenging because they're usually one per 10,000. So it's a needle in a haystack. So it took a lot of time browsing through those microscopic slides to find this one pollen grain that was very relevant to our study.
What made that walnut relative so critical?
Because it's one of the only taxa, only new species that is brand new that appears in the Paleocene. Mm-hmm. So you've got the extinction, we've got a lot of flowers, plants, ferns that go extinct at the KT boundary, which is something that we see in the leaf record as well. So we can see the moment where those pollen grains disappear. But because of the reworking, this was not clear cut. So we really had to find those very rare new appearing taxa on the other side of the boundary in the Paleocene too. So this was quite challenging to put that project together. But
yeah.
We did it.
So you did it. Having worked together on something this scale, did it give you each a new perspective into the other's work?
For me, I don't think so. I mean, we've worked together on a lot of previous projects. And I've always, appreciated Antoine's work. It's so, both of ours is critical to each other's. I mean, wherever we work, we need to know where this KT boundary is, when Earth's last mass extinction happened. And I know it takes a lot of work to figure it out. Antoine also knows that I'm a very impatient person, so I'm always like, where is it, where is it, where is it? And this is about,
yeah,
about
I guess,
par for the course, huh?
I guess
me pestering you and you.
Yeah, you've been talking about search image. We all have different search image, but also different work areas, and the strengths is actually to be together and using those different strengths. I mean, I'm going out with you very often in the field, and I look for small stuff because I'm a micropaleontologist, and sometimes I walk and I hear a teller behind me is like, oh, you missed this, and there's this big dinosaur bone. It's like, because I don't have the search image, I just don't see the big stuff. And the same way, I look at different stuff. So it has been a good collaboration just because also we are quite different in what we're interested in.
So what was the most rewarding part working together on this project for each of you?
For me, it was just telling this whole story. I mean, working together with a lot of other scientists as well. I mean, again, because no one scientist could put this story together. It's impossible. There's too many areas of expertise. So I think that was just the most rewarding, just how it all came together. I sort of had an idea of how it would come together. And very oftentimes when you have, you know, what your idea and reality are way off from each other. But with this, it actually worked out pretty well. We said we're going to do this, that, and the other thing. And with this paper, all the experts that we brought in, you know, to bear on this one question, it put together a really amazing piece of work.
Well, I guess I think the rewarding thing and the exciting thing is that this is not the end of the story. So this is actually probably the pivotal study that's going to come, that's going to lead to other research project in the Denver Basin. So that's great, I think. And I'm very excited to jump onto other project in the area. And I love Denver as well, so I'm looking forward to be back.
Yeah, I mean, it is the start of something big, I think.
Always a good sign that your collaborators will come back.
Yeah.
Any safe for work field antics or anecdotes you want to share?
Oh man, any anecdotal stories? I guess one of my fondest memories of being out in the field with Antoine is being out in the field and getting caught in a really bad rainstorm and just getting completely drenched. And Antoine's body is completely covered with tattoos of dinosaurs and, you know, mostly dinosaurs and plants. And he consistently wins these tattoo conventions. You were just at the Denver Tattoo Convention, right? Brought home the first place trophy. Nicely done. But I remember being with one of my interns, and because you look at Antoine, now you can't really tell he has tattoos. Uh-huh. But with his wet t-shirt, you know, he's definitely gonna win that wet t-shirt contest. And my interns is like staring at Antoine, looking at all of the artwork, and I don't know, it was pretty funny.
Yeah, no wet t-shirts anymore.
Yeah.
That's great. Cool. Anything on your end, Antoine? So what's the tattoo convention like?
The tattoo convention, well, it may sound wild, but it's also a family event. More surprisingly, people bring their kids and their family, and they're having a good time. There's a lot of people being tattooed there, and that's the whole point of it. It's it's a place where artists from the entire United States, or sometimes even from different countries, will come over. So if you can't travel, then this is a place where the artists will come over.
Yeah.
And there's some real talent out there. So this is an opportunity to get something, and there is content and all sorts of events as well.
Is this the first time you've participated in?
No, I've been to a couple. I've been to several of the Denver ones as well. So yeah.
Is Denver a hot market for tattoos?
It looks like it. I mean, there's quite a bit of tattooed people here, so.
Yeah. Have you been tattooed here?
What?
Have you gotten a tattoo by an artist here?
Not in Denver. Not in the Denver area. And I don't know, I'm running out of room, so.
How many hours of tattoos?
I do have 350 hours.
That's impressive.
Yeah, that's incredible. It always blows my mind.
Yeah. So last question on tattoos, because we've totally taken a left-hand turn, but what was your first tattoo, and what made you decide that this, like, essentially your body has become a beautiful canvas of paleontology?
Well, the interesting thing about science, and I really think that science cannot be disconnected from art, whatever that science field is. But especially with paleontology, we are time travelers. And what best way to time travel than with art? So we very often call for artists to reconstruct what we imagine in our minds, what those fossils tell us. And I've always loved what we call paleo art, or reconstruction of ancient times, done by artists. So I've always wanted to have some reconstruction. So most of my art is based on the Hell Creek Formation, which is that place I've been to in North Dakota. And my first tattoo was on my chest. It was pretty big, and it was sort of like a test to see if I would go further. And I got it done just after, during my completion of my PhD. So I have planned the sessions during key time of my PhD, when I submitted the manuscript and before defending. So that would also give me a little push to be on time for those deadlines.
Wow.
And it did work.
Yeah. So. But no tattoos as a result of Colorado Springs yet. You met your deadlines.
You're running out of canvas.
That's great. Cool. I think that will wrap on that. All right. Thank you, Drs. Tyler Leeson and Antoine Bercovici. I'm Maura O'Neill, the Communications Manager here at the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. This has been Behind the Science, a production of the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. Thanks for listening.